Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Seems by reading this gambling report that we're in deep trouble in this country, because problem gambling in Ireland causes serious harm and has been underestimated. That's according to a new ESRI, Economic Social Research Institute study published today. The Problem Gambling Review estimated that 12,000 people, 12,000 adults in Ireland are problem gamblers, but admitted the figure is probably much higher than that. Also, 10 times that figure are at low or moderate risk of developing a problem. Well, for more on this, I'm joined by Dr. Shane Timmins from the ESRI and consultant psychiatrist Professor Colin O'Gara. You're both very welcome to the programme. And you can text us as well, 51551 on this. Shane Timmins, I might come to you first of all, because the ESRI carried out a review of international and Irish evidence and have quantified the number of problem gamblers for the very first time, actually, in this country. And you came up with a figure of 12,000 adults as problem gamblers. And are you saying that's an underestimate as well?
Afternoon, Cormac. Yep. So the Gambling Regulatory Authority commissioned us to review the available evidence there on problem gambling. Now, I'll start off by saying that problem gambling isn't easy to define. It's essentially the presence of some or all different behaviours, like lying about how much you're gambling, trying to cut down on your gambling but failing, or gambling with increasingly large amounts. So a lot of analogies there with other forms of addiction.
Yeah.
That figure of 12,000 problem gamblers comes from a 2020 survey, so a survey from a few years ago. And the reason we think it's probably an underestimate is due to the kind of survey method. So the survey was run face-to-face with people. So a surveyor essentially called to your door and then asked you questions. Among those questions were questions about your gambling behavior. Now, we know that gambling behavior tends to be stigmatized, and that oftentimes when people are responding to surveys about these sorts of social issues, we see what's called social desirability bias. So basically, people misreporting their behavior or their attitude in order to come across in a better light. And then compounding this is another issue that cropped up in the literature that we reviewed, that people are often inaccurate in estimating their own gambling behavior. So because of that, we think that 12,000 problem gambler figure is probably a lower bound estimate.
So 12,000 is an awful lot of people, though. If you break it down county by county, it's an awful lot of people. But the fact that it's an underestimate as well is frightening. The other figure that's frightening is that those at risk of being problem gamblers. So that figure stands at about 125,000 or so. Is that right?
Yeah, so that's, again, that estimate there is 125,000 at some form of risk. So that might be that they exhibit one or two of those behaviours, which are clearly problematic. Now, obviously, the problem gamblers themselves and those at risk, they face financial and health consequences as a result. But there are also consequences for their relationships. So partners suffer, children suffer, and wider families suffer as well. So those estimates of who is at risk or who might be a problem gambler doesn't really show the wider consequences on society at large of problem gambling.
Do we know who's most at risk in terms of age category?
So the international literature and the Irish survey as well shows a few groups that are more at risk. So typically it's men, lower socioeconomic groups, people with other mental health issues and other forms of addiction. But there's increasing focus as well on risks to younger people. So younger people are more at risk, but the focus really comes out of the growing availability of what might be considered gambling adjacent games. So these are they're games that don't really fall under gambling regulation, but show some similarities. So, for example, there are online casino games that young people can play on social media. They don't involve wagering real money. You kind of wager points, but you might play poker with those points or play bingo with those points, for example. And there's other studies showing that the more a young person plays those games, the more likely they are to proceed on to online gambling itself.
So it's almost like a gateway drug, so to speak. But some people will be listening, Shane, and I'll get to Colin now in just a second, but some people will listen and say, if it's not real money, what's the harm?
So for, I think, younger people in particular, you can see some of the same the neuroscience evidence there suggests that some of the same neural pathways are activated, so the same reward systems there when people are playing with points instead of money. So there can be the transition there. There are also issues for younger people in particular, so with video games, where real money is wagered on what are called loot boxes. So you might be familiar with loot boxes in games, but essentially a young person or any person who's playing the video game can pay for a loot box. And the outcome of that loot box, so it's some sort of benefit for you within the game, is uncertain. So there you're wagering money on an uncertain outcome. For most people, that falls under the definition of gambling. But loot boxes in many countries don't fall under gambling regulations.
Stay with me, Shane, if you don't mind. That's Shane Timmins, Dr. Shane Timmins from the ESRI. I have with me as well, as I say, consultant psychiatrist, Professor Colin O'Gara. Colin, you're very welcome. And you deal with the effects of problem gambling day to day in your clinic. What do you make of what Shane has been telling us?
Well, I entirely agree, Cormac, with pretty much everything that Shane has been saying. And it's refreshing to hear that the traditional estimates of problem gambling have been underestimated. I would look at a recent Gamble Aware study in the UK, which had 18,000 participants. Shane mentioned that face-to-face studies, because of the stigmatized nature of gambling, are likely to underestimate the condition. But this study, Cormac, Gamble Aware study in the UK, and for any of your listeners curious, can look it up. There's a good Guardian article on it in recent months. 7.5% was the figure at risk, which would convert to 375,000 Irish people at risk. Now, what at risk of gambling means that instead of being 24/7 annihilated by gambling, preoccupied 24/7 and ending up in a lot of cases, we know, in prison or dying by suicide, that you have finances in deep trouble, that there's relationship difficulties, could be fights within the home, there could be depression, anxiety. That's what at risk means. I mean, it's often put out there in the literature as this kind of vague thing that I think in a lot of cases people don't actually get. But I mean, the pathological gambling figure, which was put at 0.3 for Ireland, which converted to 12%, which in my view is pitifully underestimated, we're actually talking 3.7% for the figure in the UK out of these 18,000 people. So we're talking very, very tens of thousands into hundreds of thousands of people that are affected by the either the actual pathological gambling picture, which, as I said, is a complete annihilation of an individual and their family, all the way on the spectrum to going to the races maybe one weekend, spending more than you'd want to, maybe drinking a little bit more as well with that, realizing that there isn't money for particular aspects of the family's finances, and that translates into relationship difficulties, work difficulties, and so on. So it's so just
what you're describing really as a layperson listening to you is an absolute nightmare or a hell. You mentioned at risk or problem gambling as prison or suicide or relationship difficulties, mental health difficulties that you're trying to stop and you can't, impoverishing the household, work difficulties. And I'm pretty sure that, in fact, I know that listeners will be tuning in to you, Colin, and to Shane, and saying, I actually could be in that category here. I mean, what? And we haven't even talked about advertising and the way gambling businesses are focusing on people, and especially people at risk.
Well, you know, we focused on it, certainly, Cormac, whether it was in the context of the Irish College of Psychiatrists position paper from a few years back, or indeed, you know, some of the many interviews that I've done or other people have done in terms of trying to campaign for what is effectively an utter shambles in terms of advertising in this country. I mean, if you sit down in front of a sporting event in this country, you are literally bombarded with ads, you know, and that has been the staple and continues to be the staple to this date. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we know that advertising does affect adolescents' behavior. In particular, the adolescent brain is at a critical phase of development, which is not fully mature until the age of 25 in males. It's no surprise that young males are the 15 to 24 age group is the most affected age group here. And, you know, all of the advertising is very sophisticated. They use celebrity endorsement and, you know, basically heroes of young people and young boys and girls. And You know, so you can't really watch a sporting event without this. And the legislation next year, or sorry, this year actually, is supposed to take gambling out up to the watershed. But our position paper years ago said it should come out altogether. Yeah. I think we need to follow other countries such as Belgium and get advertising off our televisions, off our social media platforms and off radio, frankly, because there's no place for it.
Because the difficulty now is that everybody has a phone almost, and it's just too easy, isn't it, to get hooked if you're of that nature. Can I ask you, and I'll come back to you, Shane, in just a second about the second study that you're being asked to do, but Colin, Shane mentioned in terms of the research, the people who are at risk, and it's usually men or people on a lower socioeconomic part of that strata in society, those with addiction issues or mental health issues, and young people as well. But women are being increasingly targeted by advertisers. Isn't that right? Is that your experience?
Yeah, I mean, the 3.7 and 7.5% that was stated in the study was 2% for women in terms of severe pathological gambling. And, you know, for the at-risk was 4%. So there's no question that women are presenting to our clinics for clinical treatment of gambling disorder. The literature would suggest that the reasons women gamble are different to men in terms of men will gamble in a competitive fashion to beat the house and compete with each other, particularly on exchanges and that and those type of offers. But with women, it's more for the literature would suggest for emotional regulation, boredom, the avoidance of depression and anxiety. But at the end of the day, there's no stereotyping here. You know, we treat women who have severe sports betting problems, but there's definitely preponderance for online slots are casino products for women, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you really briefly, Shane Timmins, you've been asked to do a second study by the gambling regulator, is that right?
Yeah, so our plan for later this year is to try to get a better handle on the estimates for problem gambling and those at risk in Ireland. So we'll be running some data collection exercises of our own later this year on that. But if I could just come back to the issue of ads and kind of the ways to target problem gambling. So I'd agree there about the issue of bombardment with ads and evidence that ads do lead to more people gambling. Evidence for interventions on those ads, like responsible gambling messages, the evidence suggests that they don't work, and that instead the interventions need to be in place in-game. So things like allowing people to set limits ahead of time for how much they're going to gamble, and also giving them feedback on how much they're losing and how those losses are accumulating. Those are the things that the evidence suggests are effective, rather than those responsible gambling messages.
Well, I ask, are our TDs and senators listening? You can let us know what you think to 51551, but my thanks to Dr. Shane Timmins of the ESRI and Professor Colin O'Gara as well.